Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We call this Baltimore Positive. We're getting back out on the road with Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I just put some dates together. We're going to be at Costas next week. I got Pizza John's the week after that. We're going to do a double the week of Coco's on November 5th. We're also going to be at State Fair in Catonsville. I will have Raven scratch-offs. Been a much luckier batch than the backup quarterbacks have been around here during a bye week. I don't want to give it all away because I might wind up running this segment several times before Christmas or Father's Day, because it is about a book and an author, and I've already started bookmarking pages about Steve Bisciotti. Every Day is Sunday is the book. I wonder what had happened to Ken Belson, because right around when I lost my press pass the first time, I haven't found him. He was in the laboratory writing about, let's see, how Jerry Jones, Robert Kraft, and Roger Goodell, three of the good ones, turn the NFL into a cultural and economic juggernaut. He is the longtime sports business reporter for the New York Times. He is now in the business section of the New York Times because The Athletic kind of came in and took over, sort of like Liv did with golf. I'm not sure, but he has written a book. And first things first, the book came. My wife looked at it and she said, "Oh, you got a book." She left it on my desk, and I'm like, "This isn't a book." Belson's like peeling back the onion. I bet there's some blockbuster stuff in here. So I just got it day before yesterday. So welcome aboard. I know it's all new and fresh, and I want to give you all the oxygen in the world to talk about what I'm sure is a book that I'm going to want to read.
Yeah, no, thank you, Nestor. Thanks always for having me on. I appreciate it. Yeah, this was, depending on where you start, this was about 10 years in the making. I've covered the NFL since 2013. And my editor, told me at the time, I don't care if you go to a game. You want to go to a game, great. But really, write about how they got to be an institution, this big sort of immovable media company that we're now consumed with as a nation. And so that was the mandate, and I spent a lot of time around the owners, the union, the network people, been to stadiums, obviously a lot of fans. It's a really 360 view of the league, and as you can only put so much in the newspaper. There's just I had notebooks and notebooks and material that never got used, so I had a bit of a running start with this book. But then I zeroed in on Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft, two most successful owners, business-wise, and Roger Goodell, who's kind of their, the guy who kind of orchestrates it, yeah. So that's how the three characters got chosen and how the book got written.
Well, and I love the first words. How in the hell did this happen? So, I come at this the hard way as a 57-year-old that got into the sports business because I love sports. I love the Orioles. I thought maybe one day we'll get a football team back, and then it happened, right? So, you've even peeled back. I learned a few things just fingering through the book in the index, just looking up Bo Modell and Bisciotti, that you had some pieces in there of even Bisciotti and Dan Snyder, which I featured on my Facebook this morning because it had the F-bomb in it. But I go back to 84. I started working at the Baltimore News American with John Steadman in January of 84. So the Orioles had just won the World Series. The Colts were 8 weeks away from leaving. I was 15 years old, right? So that's how far back into the newspaper I go. So Vito Stellino and everybody at the Sun, Eminent Domain, William Hudnut, trying to steal a team, trying to steal the Raiders, trying to steal the Rams, trying to do anything. The Cardinals, Bill Bidwell, Mr. Bidwell, bring us your team. We hoard ourselves here in the 80s, Ken. So, and then we get the team, and now 30 years in, I find out that there's no accountability in the building here at all. I've written about that with a lot of words this week. And it really does come down to, with me challenging John Harbaugh or Steve Bisciotti, they're too big to fail. They literally, there is no oversight, not even on the gambling. There's just no oversight. It's larger than anything, which is maybe why they moved you out of the sports department, said, this thing here is like one of the top 15 businesses in our universe, right there with GE, and you name any other big business America has ever had. It looks like football, but it writes like business, right?
The NFL, as one executive told me, it's a Fortune 100 company that's masquerading as a football league. It's a business. There's no denying it. I mean, obviously their main product is a game, but it's a product. It's Roger Goodell is a quote in there from one of his executives who said Roger's not concerned with the NBA or Major League Baseball. He wants the NFL to be seen in the same light as Disney and the Vatican. Disney, family-friendly media company with fingers in all pots, and then the Vatican, a cultural institution. That's where he's looking. He's not looking at like just gaining fans. He wants it's a business, and he's doing this at the behest of the owners. You brought up the sordid history of Baltimore sports. It really is sadly a poster child for how these leagues treat cities. It's all about trying to get public money, this so-called public-private partnership. This is a relatively new thing. Back in the old days, the owners built the stadiums. They did it on their own. Nobody went there with a handout. And then obviously you had the Irsays, Bob Irsay, fighting with the governor and the mayor and all that, and then the Mayflower trucks. And then, this is interesting because you mentioned Art Modell. They build a stadium on spec. And they turn the tables, and Art Modell's not getting money from Cleveland, so he shows up. And it's interesting. Art Modell was really financially in a lot of trouble, and this is one thing that had never been reported. It's in that chapter. He was so broke. This was before Steve Bisciotti. He was so broke the NFL had to step in and force Art Modell to get a partner, and that was not reported because the NFL was trying to get a credit line for stadiums. And so if Morgan Stanley or Bank of America found out that one of the clubs was on life support, it could have screwed up the whole deal. So one of the lawyers involved in that told me that all communications were done over the phone. There were no letters typed up, no correspondence between secretaries and owners because they didn't want it to leak out. Yeah, Art Modell was, he got the free gig to come over, and the Ravens fans probably thank him for it. But it didn't really solve his financial problems. And that's where Steve Bisciotti came in.
Well, it certainly changed my life. And we're talking about 1995, 96. I've talked about it so much. I had Viviano on last year talking about how he got the scoop that Art was moving the team here at that time. But let's fast forward a little bit because in a few years later, Art sold off the piece here to Bisciotti. Bisciotti came in. I probably met you 2 decades ago or like that at owners' meetings 20, 23 years ago. I started going to owners' meetings and sensing how all of this works, seeing Mr. Benson. And seeing, everybody had to be called Mr. Somebody, including Dan Snyder, which is an interesting snippet in your book. But there was the point where Tagliabue was leaving. And Tagliabue famously said to us, build a museum, all of that stuff that happened at the Rosemont Horizon when we didn't get Charlotte, didn't get Jacksonville. That was a mistake. And then Houston, Tennessee, Nashville, all the crazy things that happened in the mid-90s and late 90s. But by then, things had settled down and they were going to have a new commissioner. And I remember Dick Cass being one of the sort of short list guys. And I remember being in the middle of all that. And Dick didn't want to be the commissioner, at least if he did, he didn't act like he did. He was frontline with Jerry, which is how he got here to begin with. I mean, Dick's an OG. And they made Goodell the commissioner at that time. And I think about what happened then, and I have Marty Conway on a lot talking about that big number, the billions of numbers that were promised by him. I guess his first time he got a contract. I guess he's on his third or fourth now, whatever the number is for him, because it's been about 20 years of Raj at this point. Could anybody have made this bigger, or could anybody have screwed it up, Ken? Because it is amazing how they've ridden the wave of Trump, of head injuries, of the movie out of Pittsburgh, all the awful stuff, lawsuits from the old players. I saw John Mackey's wife a couple of weeks ago, Sylvia. So, like, I've been through all of this. It's uncanny how the internet, television going down, media going down, Trump coming in, red, white, and blue, how with the military and the flag they've been, and God and Thanksgiving and Christmas, all of that. And Yom Kippur for just all across the board. They'll play anytime, anywhere, including Wednesdays in Pittsburgh during a plague. The plague? I didn't even think. I'm thinking all this stuff in 20 years, and all they do is get bigger, no matter what. And I'm thinking, is that Goodell? Is that the game? Is that shrewd management in your mind?
Yeah, it's a thread throughout the book, and you mentioned those crises. We didn't mention Ray Rice. We didn't mention Richie Incognito with bullying, Deflategate. There's been a scandal du jour. I didn't anticipate this when I started writing about the NFL, but I could write 100 hockey stories, and they wouldn't get as many readers as one big NFL story. It just sucks the oxygen out of every argument or every debate, and it's a lens through which we see social issues, including social protests. You mentioned the president. President doesn't go after hockey. No offense. I mean, he did take aim at LeBron and Steph Curry, but that was a back and
He
forth.
loves Gretzky. He loves Gretzky
Yes,
because
he loves
Gretzky
Gretzky.
voted for. Oh, that he's Canadian. You can't vote for him. I'm sorry. Yeah.
But no, the NFL is a magnet for all this, and some of that's been very deliberate. But anyway, the thread in the book that I found interesting was really how they deal with crises. The league is run by lawyers and marketing people. The first thing they do is limit liability, whether it's settling a case, bringing a case, drawing a case out. They actually have their backs to the wall in the Brian Flores case. On the Rooney Rule, John Gruden actually has taken them to task as well. But often they just settle it and let it go away, have just move the turn the page, and then you get the marketing, and they are expert at using their muscle, financial and otherwise, to change the narrative. And after Ray Rice, Roger Goodell flew down to De Texas, donated $1 million to a call center for women, in distress, and suddenly we got a blizzard of PSAs with Eli Manning and all these players talking about their concern for women and the safety of women, and then
And then
by
Justin Tucker happens here, and not a word is said in our community. I mean, it's
there,
unbelievable. And he'll be kicking in the league in 4 weeks, no doubt about it, right?
yeah, and Deshaun Watson, it popped up again, but by and large, the narrative, people moved on, and I've seen this over and over in different issues over the years. Colin Kaepernick, they came up with Inspire Change. They got Roc Nation to come in and do some of their grassroots funding. And is anybody protesting now? I don't see it. Even Trump, you mentioned Trump. Trump 1.0, they were blindsided. They did not expect that, particularly Robert Kraft, Jerry Jones. They were friends with Trump and gave him money. But 2.0, it's interesting. Who showed up at the Super Bowl? Gail Benson invites the president. And when they're going to announce the draft to be in Washington in 2027, they do it in the Oval Office. Josh Harris, the private equity billionaire, gives him a commander's jersey and says, "You are the ultimate commander." This is all about flattery. Roger Goodell is the son of a senator, U.S. senator. He knows how the game is played that way.
Ken Belson is my guest. His book is one that you should run and grab. Every Day is Sunday: How Jerry Jones, Robert Kraft, and Roger Goodell Turned the NFL into a Cultural and Economic Juggernaut. I guess the basis of doing this, and you began the first paragraph with these really, really wealthy dudes, or at least perceived as such, whether they are or aren't, if they have secondary businesses, or if they're moguls in other places, bringing in funny money, Wall Street money, friends money, private equity money, but they get no say in anything. We're into that with the baseball team here, where the guy buys his team and makes a bobblehead of himself first, and then the team finishes in last place, and they're spending their money, and they're wondering why nobody's going to the games. I just think there's a thing with billionaires, and I've learned this the hard way. I thought I could change Peter Angelos 20 years ago, like a fool. That it's just a different world, and you know that from swimming in it. But then you bring in more money, and you led the book with it. And I was kind of shocked when I thought, well, Ken must think this is important to think about this funny money coming in here, that Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft have so much money but still need more. And the weirdest thing, especially after Joe Flacco winning for the Bengals, is that the only person that backs off is the conservative Mike Brown, right? Who says, no, nah, these are family businesses, but they're not.
Yeah, well, Mike is still a family business. There's a handful of them left. But yeah, I deliberately started with that because, first of all, you had the two characters. I have it on my phone. I took a photo of it when it happened. It's Jerry Jones and his son Stephen, and Robert Kraft and his son Jonathan in the lobby of a hotel in Minneapolis or outside of Minneapolis, where they're going to vote very shortly to approve private equity money investment up to 10%, literally hundreds of millions of dollars, with no voting rights. That's a deal most owners would take, right? Sell off some equity, cash out.
So it could be Saudi Arabian money, is what you're telling me, right? It
No,
could
it
be.
cannot. That's sovereign wealth
Okay.
money.
Okay.
They could sovereign Saudis could be invested in the private equity, but the private equity are U.S.
It's a shell game. Yeah, they could still be in on it. Yeah. We
It,
don't know who the 10% owner is, and it doesn't matter, right? Like,
right.
that's it. Okay.
Don't ask, don't tell. But this was a deal the other leagues had done, but the NFL is the biggest league. The numbers are, Jeffrey Lurie sold 10% of his team at $8.5 billion. That's $850 million, and nobody's asking for anything other than that stake, which they might cash out in a few years. So I literally witnessed them, and it was in August of 24. They were suntanned. They had spent the summer. Jerry spends his summer in the south of France. Robert on the Cape. They were chuckling, and I thought, this is it. This is the moment when they're just laughing their way to the bank. They've got the world at their hand. And then Roger Goodell comes over. If I remember, Clark Hunt and Art Rooney were there too. And Roger Goodell comes over, and the chuckling continues. And it was all right there in the lobby of the hotel. So I thought that's a moment where the rich keep getting richer. And you said, well, why didn't you and I do that? Well, it takes money to make money in these at these elevations, and these guys know how to do it.
Ken, there's a couple things. I love having you on. I feel like I could visit all day and all night and talk about all this stuff, especially with somebody as well read and the history of all of this times 32 franchises. I just had the Baltimore slice for about 40 years, so I know enough to be dangerous around here. But the things that would have brought them down, I would have thought the head trauma and broken
Yes.
necks would have been something. I would have thought the Colin Kaepernick. A social issue of how you're going to treat people of color in a game where 80% of the people are of color, and not to mention the fan base. And then the female thing. Well, I thought we'd get over that because we're okay with men beating women. We just kind of are over the course of time. And we're okay with men shooting children in school. So we've gotten through all of that. But the gambling thing. Of all the weirdness over all the years of doing this back in the 90s when the team first came here. And if I would have been running around with Ray Lewis and Vinny Testaverde in 1996 and talking numbers and talking point, I never would have had a pre I would have thought that would have been the one thing they would have taken my press credential for. If I was asking Joe Flacco how the arm felt before he went out this week and went on the radio and started talking about wagering on it. The notion that that I was in Vegas last week and there's a football team there, and I had JT the Brick on this week talking about his football team there, and that I'm sponsored by the lottery, and John Martin gave the numbers of September, which are the largest gambling numbers ever, ever, ever. It's only been 5 years here, but it's way larger than they ever thought it was going to be. They thought it was going to be more casino, but it turns out it's for Joe Sixpack in the basement at this point to gamble. I just think here's another frontier where I'm like, if there's anything that's going to screw this up, if that kid almost dying on the turf in Cincinnati 2 years ago in front of the whole world didn't bring this down, the gambling part of this, where bets of millions and millions and billions of dollars are being adjudicated by some guy saying pass interference or no pass interference, and if you think that they've already got players in on it immediately breaking rules and doing things. I just think it's the Garden of Eden. Ken, it's going to break the league. It's going to wreck them. Tell me how it's not.
Well, I'm not convinced that it won't. But look, the NFL is the most gambled on sport by far. College football's after that, and that's why it gets the lion's share of attention. But you look in baseball, there was a pitcher just banned for life. It infects all sports. It takes, and I know this in business. It takes years, decades sometimes to build up trust with consumers. Tylenol has been in the news. Remember, there was a scare back in the 80s about Tylenol. Took them years to rebuild their brand. It takes an instant to lose it. And so if we get a case where we find out a quarterback or a kicker or somebody like that, a long snapper, is taking money to make a bad play and influence the line, that's disastrous. Is it a deal breaker? Probably not, but it's hard to put the genie back in the bottle when you do that. Just to swing back to Jerry Jones and Robert just for a moment, there's a scene in the book where they go out to Las Vegas in 2016. This is almost a year before Mark Davis gets the right to move the Raiders there, and they're meeting with politicians and business leaders. And the county commissioner, Steve Sisolak, told me, he was at that lunch. He said he was amazed. They never asked about gambling. They had already moved on mentally, that gambling is eventually going to, happen because the Supreme Court was going to overturn the rule that banned it. And that was still 2 years out. And Jerry and Robert, all they cared about was, is Las Vegas big enough? Can we sustain a team there? Do are there enough season ticket holders? And he was quite surprised, given all their public rhetoric, in this private meeting, they didn't seem concerned at all. It's not a coincidence that Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft also invested in DraftKings before it went public. So these guys are, they saw this coming down the pike 5, 10 years before probably the average person did.
Ken Belson is our guest. If you're listening out on the radio, Every Day is Sunday is the new book. I would encourage everybody to go out. Ken, of course, a longtime New York Times sports business writer, and specifically really NFL writer, because it's its own, like Dion. I am a brand. I am a business. All right, so let's get to Bisciotti for a minute, because his name's once or twice in your book, and F-bombs toward Daniel Snyder, which everyone on our side of the fence will dig. Everybody on their side of the fence will dig, too, at this point, I think. What do these guys care about? Because he doesn't care about women in massage parlors in Baltimore. He doesn't care about media people who he's pretended to care about. And say, he doesn't care about much. He doesn't care about speaking to the fans because he stopped doing press conferences 8 years ago. The Ray Rice thing changed him dramatically. Everyone around him tells me that. I have felt that. But what does he care about when the thing's throwing off hundreds of millions of dollars of equity, if not revenue? It's a rocket ship. I mean, he bought it for the $625 million back in 25 years ago. It's worth 5 billion, 6 billion, depends on which day you ask me or which day I call Kurt Bodenhausen, and he'll give me the update. He'll give me the timpani every year like Ed McMahon. Is there anything that keeps these guys up at night? Because I feel like Madrid, Frankfurt, London, Tokyo, like it's all coming down the line. I mean, Jacksonville ain't there for long. The Chargers aren't there for like, I mean, I was out in the South Bay. I get it. But it feels to me like the next thing's the 18th game, I guess, and the NFLPA. I'll have you back on in 6 months and there'll be a new problem. But I do wonder, at what point does this thing even burp or fart? I mean, ever.
Well, you're right about the 18th game. There's a quote in there from Jim Irsay. I had asked him, he was one of the first owners I spoke to for the book. All the teams make money. By the time they turn on the lights at the beginning of the season, they're already at break even because the media money coming in pays for the salary cap, their largest expense, and pretty much most of their operations. So everybody's doing well. It's a good time to be an NFL owner. Jim Irsay had a quote about it. He said, even Gomer Pyle could run an NFL team. It's like putting a 747 on
I'm going to
autopilot.
tell Sashi Brown that the minute I meet him.
It's a great quote. Actually, his team president was on the Zoom call with me at the time, and he kind of looked down like, yeah, I don't think we really
Jim
want that
said a
one.
lot of things. I mean, we're going to miss Jim, aren't we? Really.
Yeah, no, Jim was one of a kind for sure. And but anyway, so the point is they're all making money. As to Steve, I don't know his personal motivations. I have not interviewed him, but there's roughly about a quarter of, or excuse me, about a third of the owners, 10 to 12 owners, who are very involved, not just with their teams, but in league business. Robert and Jerry, Arthur Blank, Art Rooney, John Mara, they're kind of the stalwarts. They're helping on all the committees. They're kind of using their own personal Rolodexes. And then you get a bunch of owners in the middle who contribute but aren't big players. So Dean Spanos in LA, Jed York in San Francisco, the Wilf family in Minnesota. And then you get another dozen off to the side that frankly aren't very involved anymore. Paul Allen was never very involved. His sister Jody is not. George McCaskey's involved, but he's not a heavy hitter.
They just send a representative to the owners' meetings, right? I mean,
Well,
that's where
George
Dick
shows
Cass
up.
stepped in the last 10 years and was that guy for Steve. Yes.
Exactly. And then you get Mike Brown, his daughter Katie represents the team. So you get a lot of owners that are just riding along, basically. Gail Benson's not, she's there, but she's not a super heavyweight either. I should say Shad Khan in Jacksonville actually is quite active. So I would put Steve in that third group. pays his bills, team does okay, not this year, but most years, has a stadium, doesn't seem to kick up too much dust, and votes wherever the wind goes. I heard that he's, I don't know whether he's going to sell the club or give it to one of his kids. A lot of these owners now are in their 70s, the Jones and Crafter are in their 80s. We will see a new generation of owners start to come in the door. We already have in Washington.
Well, and we're going to see the kids in New England and in Dallas, right? I mean, that they've been groomed. Hate to
Yes.
use that word for this, but like they're not going anywhere. None of these people are going anywhere.
No, Arthur Blank's son, one of his sons, Josh, is already very involved. Jeffrey Lurie's kid is involved.
Jim Irsay's daughter's running the Colts, doing a good
Steve,
job.
exactly. They stepped right in, all three of them. And then Steve Ross's kid as well. Steve's in his 80s. So, yeah, we will see a change of the guard, and then we will see some succession. I have to say, just this is just my own observation, but it's very hard to follow a founder. The founder's vision, the founder's energy. You look at Al Davis. I mean, he was a singular figure. And then you get Mark. Falls backwards into money, gets a free stadium in Vegas, and
And
now
makes more money in a minute than his father made in his lifetime, literally,
yeah.
right? Like just falling into money. I talked to JT the Brick. He said, we went from 31st in revenue to third. And I'm
Yes.
like, and that's happened since I Jack Del Rio and you and me were out at the Biltmore having a cocktail saying, hey,
Right.
maybe one the Raiders will get there one day. There was now I go out there, the blimp's built, they've had a Super Bowl there, and
Yep.
Mark Davis has become one of the wealthier of the wealthiest
Yeah.
after being Pobrecito up in Alameda County, right?
It's hard to forget that, or it's easy to forget that he used to fly on Southwest Airlines.
I ran into Al Davis, and every time I have Amy on, Al Davis sat in front of me on a flight out of Dana Point, California, up to Oakland, and all he talked about was women's college basketball. He had the brackets out, and he was obsessed with, like, I've had moments with all, I've had snapshots with all of these people, and that's why this book, when I got it, my wife's like, oh, you got another book. I'm like, no. This might be the best book since like Leibovich's book.
Yeah, no, Lebo. Well, Lebo had a different take, but he saw those guys for what they were, right? Needy billionaires. There's a scene in there with Robert Kraft. I contrast Jerry and Robert, and this TV producer was saying, we always put Jerry on the air because he's Jerry, but also because he's the GM, right? We would show the GM normally, but then we show Jerry in his box, his throne at AT&T Stadium. He said, but Robert's different. Robert wants to be on TV. He actually said there are many owners who tell the producers, don't put me on. I don't need it. Stan Kroenke, you'll never see him on air. But so there's a scene in the book where it was a rainy night at Foxborough, and they tried to show Robert on screen, but the glass covering the suite had all this glare from the stadium lights, and so it really wasn't a usable camera shot, so they didn't show him. And the next day, the producer gets a call from Robert Kraft, says, "How come you didn't show me on air?" So here he is watching his team, and yet he's also got an eye up on the TV to see if he's being shown. So yeah, the egos are definitely apparent.
I'm still wondering about Roger's wife and the tattoo. I'll get a drink with Mark at some point in DC. Every day is Sunday. Hey man, if this is as good as Leibovich, I mean, listen, man, I loved his book, and I'll tell anybody read his book. And as we get into it, read Lords of the Realm too, because the baseball thing's about to happen next year too.
Yeah.
Business is sports. I love having you on, Belson. Keep up the great work, and I'll keep reading. You keep writing, and good luck with the book. And hope to have you back on before Christmas because we need to sell more copies. All right.
Okay. Thanks, Nestor. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Ken Belson, the book is Every Day is Sunday. If you love the NFL, if you love to know how it works, how the sausage is made, how they're making all this money when there's no fans in the stands, you find out. This go read the book. I'm going to be doing a Maryland Crab Cake Tour courtesy of the Maryland Lottery. I'll have Raven scratch-offs to give away. Tis the season for pumpkin spice and winning. We're Baltimore positive. Stay with us.